This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.
Years ago, a special club was formed. A bunch of scrappy young men wearing red socks and white uniforms. Baseball was a relatively new game. These young men played, and the folks from Cincinnati, they love it to this day. Hey, hooray, what do you say? 100 years we celebrate the opening day parade. Smack the ball over the right field fence. Remember when a hot dog is 25 cents? Everybody stand up and shout, go Reds! It's opening day.
That was Opening Day by local musician Dave Hawkins. If you want to hear the full song, and I know you do, there's a link on our website, WVXU.org. So as Dave's saying, the season marks 150 years of Cincinnati Reds baseball. This week will be the 100th celebration of opening day. Here to talk about that and the retirement of Reds announcer Marty Brenneman, our author of Cincinnati's 150-year opening day history, Randy Freaking. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Sports writer and author of Tony Perez from Cuba to Cooperstown, John Arardi. Welcome, John.
Thank you, sir.
Cincinnati Reds team historian Greg Rhodes. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks, Michael.
And WVXU senior political analyst and resident Reds fanatic Howard Wilkinson. Welcome back, Howard.
Thank you, Michael.
Questions, comments, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Okay, so we just had Marty on in the first segment to talk about this being his last season. I'd like to hear perspective from each of you. So in love with the Reds all these years, what is Marty Brenneman's legacy here? Randy, we'll start with you.
Well, Marty's got to go down as one of the great announcers in Reds history. I mean, he's done almost a third of the 150 seasons. He's beloved. I mean, I can't imagine Reds baseball without Marty. He came in at a fortuitous time, the big red machine. You know, his first game was Henry Aaron's tie-breaking home run of Babe Ruth. He then had the big red machine for a couple years. I mean, the world championships. And then he was teamed up with the other guy we love, Joe Nuxall. So we've been blessed for the last 46 years. We're going to miss him.
Greg, you're the team historian. This is somebody who's going to be in history.
Well, that's right. And, you know, we've been so spoiled in Cincinnati and a great legacy. We've had world-class Hall of Fame announcers in Cincinnati since the 30s when Red Barber started that tradition here for five seasons. Wade Hoyt comes along in the early 40s and broadcasts until 1965. Al Michaels is here for 3 years. And then Marty took over from Al. And I mean, you look back at that roster, that's a pretty good lineup of play-by-play guys.
John, your thoughts on it?
Well, amazingly, I've never known another announcer except Marty Brenneman because I came to town the same year he did.
Oh, wow.
1974. And what amazed me about him was that, of course, we all know the story about him in spring training, his first season. They're at Al Lopez Field. And he, of course, announces welcome to Al Michaels Field because Al Michaels was so much on his mind. But then by July of that year, he made a call of a big Tony Perez home run where I think the Reds went into the ninth down perhaps 9-5. They won 10-9. Tony hit a two-run walk-off. And Marty's call was so good that the fans all of a sudden just came his way. It had taken that long for fans to warm up to him, but it was just a beautiful thing. It's lasted 46 years, which is terrific.
Howard.
Yeah, the radio station was getting swamped with phone calls from fans saying, oh, play that call again, play that call again. Right. And that's what made him.
Yep.
That's what made him here. But to me, Marty has always been very special just because of, this may sound odd, but he's a poet. He knows the English language so well. His vocabulary is so, he knows how to describe what is going on the field in a way that most play-by-play people don't. it's just a pleasure to listen to. Mm-hmm.
So was that his appeal, do you think, to the listener, his use of the language, the way that he was so prepared for big calls, even though in the interview with me he said that he doesn't really prepare for any of those historic moments?
I don't
moments.
Think he was prepared for them. I just think he has this natural ability to speak to the moment.
Yeah, he's just naturally ready for – how would you describe his appeal, guys? For...
Well, he had that – he had a big personality.
Yes.
And I think when he was teamed up with Nuxall, that really helped cement his legacy too. I mean, those two guys together were just – that was magic. And Marty will always say Joe made it easier for him. I mean, there was just this contrast that worked perfectly. But I think part of what made Brenneman so – has made him so great has just been the fact that, you know, he'll sit and talk about growing tomatoes one inning and and something else in the next inning. And it's not always – baseball, baseball, baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that he could bring his personality into the broadcast is what made him memorable.
So we had Marty and Joe for a long time. Of course, sadly, we lost Joe some years ago. But now Marty's going away, and this will be his last season. What does next season sound like in the announcer's booth, regardless of who's in there? But without him, what kind of adjustment are we in for, John, as this new season starts with relatively new voices?
I think we're in for a huge adjustment. In fact, this is the first time I've even thought about that. And for me, it'll be very uncomfortable because I've always known that voice. And the beautiful thing about Marty, and Greg Rose alluded to it, is that he is really good in the booth with somebody else. You can't say that about a lot of guys. A lot of guys are great on their own. But Marty will make anybody at home. And he does such a great job with the writers in the second inning. On radio, he's just a natural, and I'm going to miss that. And I really don't even want to think about him being gone because it's too sad. So for me, it's like, well, it'll go on forever, even though it's only one more season.
Well, Reds baseball seems to go on forever. Looks like it's got a lot of years ahead of it and a lot of years already behind it. So we're here celebrating opening day this week as well. That'll be Thursday. Thousands will flock downtown to welcome the return of baseball to the Queen City. Randy, you wrote the book on opening day history. I want to start by reading a quote that you included here on page 10 in the chapter titled, "It All Started with the Parade." This was a quote from Fred Schwed Jr. from his book, How to Watch a Baseball Game, which was published in 1957. The quote goes like this. "However, at Cincinnati, the first game is always played there. This is because the citizens of this Ohio city do not consider opening day just as opening day. They consider it one small notch below Christmas." Is it still true that opening day is like Christmas around here?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know, the way, you know, I'm a fairly competitive guy, and I think year to year, I think, are the Reds going to win opening day? And as I wrote this book, I started to reflect upon it more. And I really think it's more like Thanksgiving than Christmas. You know, there's no expectation of bringing presents, and you enjoy the family and friends you're with. I mean, that's what I remember from all of my opening days. I've gone to a lot of them. And it's amazing how I can never remember who won the game, but I can remember my sister Sue was with me, or my sister-in-law, or my kids, my nephews, nieces. It's a big family thing. And that's why I now compare it to Thanksgiving.
Well, what did you learn about opening day as you embarked on producing this book?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, I hardly knew anything about opening day. I mean, I read Greg's book, which told you everything about the games, and that was published, I think, in 2003. And I started going back reading the newspapers. I was very amazed by the poetry surrounding baseball in the late 1800s, how it really was America's national pastime. Many stories I did not know. You know, opening day as a celebration really started in 1886 and pretty low-key. They had canaries at the turnstile. And they had a pregame concert by a symphonic band, you know, that later became the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. What I didn't know was Larry McPhail saving opening day for Cincinnati in 1935 when the schedule makers tried to throw us up into Pittsburgh. And McPhail threw a fit. And thank God he did, because otherwise, you know, if McPhail would have just sat back and let that happen, we'd probably be scheduled every other year at home just like everybody else. We're very unique in that regard.
Greg, as the team historian, what can you tell us in terms of...
You know, in terms of the magnitude of opening day, in the mid-50s, the Today Show, back when Dave Garraway and what was the little
wasn't there
chimpanzee?
A monkey?
Mr. Muggs. And,
yeah. Mr. Monks.
Jack LaSchoolie.
Muggs.
Well, anyway, the whole Today crew came into Cincinnati on opening day morning to broadcast, do a live remote from Cincinnati. I mean, the tradition here has just, as Randy says, no other team is given the honor of opening every season at home in any sport, let alone just baseball. And this city has so embraced that over the years with because you can just do stuff on an annual basis and it makes it so much more significant.
And John, you've written about the Reds for a long time. And a few weeks ago, we did another baseball segment. Howard was here for that as well. We talked about whether baseball is losing its appeal nationally. And one of the responses was that Cincinnati would be behind that trend because this is a baseball town. Do you agree with that?
Definitely. I heard the other day on the radio where the commentator was making the point that baseball is really best for the people who played it as youngsters. And right now we don't have as many youngsters playing the game. So I wonder if baseball is ever going to come back to what it was. But in this town, that's absolutely correct. It will never lose its luster here because it is the home of professional baseball. And I remember when Greg Rhodes and I did the book on opening day, Lenny Harris made the point. He said, you know, there's a lot of great baseball cities, but there's just something about those elephants on opening day in Cincinnati. Because, of course, March would bring the elephants and everything else on the field, and it was truly a circus. And the one thing that does set this city apart, and I don't care what you say, is that opening day parade. Because if it wasn't for that, it would be the same as everywhere else. We might feel differently about it in our hearts and on our minds. But as far as celebrating it as a holiday, the parade is what does it. And they've even had parades here on days that there weren't games, including
1995. We had the parade at Noga. Who needs the games?
Exactly. Now, that to me says Cincinnati better than anything else.
Yeah. No, you know, and this is Cincinnati. I mean, the fact is winter is hard here. Winter is hard and long, and it seems like it'll never end. And if you're a baseball fan, you're like counting days until it comes back. And it's like a rebirth. It's a rebirth of the city. And that parade is how you celebrate that rebirth.
Right.
And then you have a game. And it doesn't really matter if you win or lose because you're going to have to play another 161 of them.
Right.
It was July of 1867 when the Cincinnati Inquirer wrote its first piece on the Cincinnati Reds or what would become the Cincinnati Reds. And I'm pulling this from Randy's book, Cincinnati's 150-Year Opening Day History. The little excerpt from the Inquirer went like this. They have laid out the grounds in elegant style, erected a spacious pavilion for the accommodation of ladies, and all the accompaniments to boot, so that the club can now boast of having the finest grounds west of New York. Everything being in order for the inauguration, the club extended an invitation to the Louisville Baseball Club to play them a match, which was accepted. And on the 4th, the game came off in the presence of hundreds of spectators, not a few of whom were ladies. There were some splendid playing on both sides. The Union Club, the Cincinnati's, having the victory. By the way, the final score, Cincinnati 60, Louisville 24. We'll continue this conversation about the upcoming Reds season and opening day after this short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. This season marks the 150th of Reds baseball in Cincinnati and the 100th anniversary of opening day celebrations here. So let's continue our chat now with author of Cincinnati's 150-year opening day history, Randy Freaking, sports writer John Rardy, and Cincinnati Reds team historian Greg Rhodes. We've also got WVXU senior political analyst and big Reds fan Howard Wilkinson. Give us a call. 513-419-7100. If you'd like to weigh in, email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Before we left you, I noted that in 1867, the Inquirer wrote about the Reds for the first time when Cincinnati beat Louisville 60-24. Greg, the team historian, tell us how a score like that is possible.
You look at those early scores, they remind you more of a high-scoring football game than a baseball game. But all of the rules back then and the playing conditions favored the hitters. Number one, you played barehanded. So it's a barehanded game. You're trying to catch that ball barehanded. You're playing on rough grounds, not manicured fields like they are today. So you had rough, uneven turf, trying to catch the ball barehanded. Plus, the hitters, pitching was underhand. And although it was fairly fast, it certainly didn't dominate. Hitters could hit the ball very easily. So it just tended to score a lot of runs.
So we're celebrating opening day again this week. We know there's a parade and a celebration and all that, but I'm curious about any of your personal or family opening day traditions, or maybe, Randy, anything that you discovered in terms of traditions related to the event and anything that you'd be willing to share about that.
Well, I think there's a lot of family celebrations around town. I mean, our own family, we've been going to the Red Fox Grill down on 6th Street since 1967.
I saw your picture in the book.
You know, we start in the morning. We then proceed to the parade. Recently, we tend to then go tailgate, and then we go to the ball game. I think a lot of families do that. They make it a day at the ballpark. There's a lot of celebration. You know, Arnold's has a great event every year.
Yeah.
Trivia contest. The old Red Stockings come in. There's some guys dressed up as Red Stockings.
Right.
And Arnold's has been serving booze down there since maybe the first Reds game started. So
I think Arnold's actually opened before 1869. Oh, wow. I forget which year.
1866.
Yeah, yeah. You can imagine the original Red Stockings of 69. Some of the boys stopping in at Arnold's perhaps for a brew.
You certainly can.
Michael, that's no exaggeration because literally there were four guys from that first team in 1869 that lived across the street from what is now the Hamilton County Courthouse.
Oh, wow.
It was the courthouse then, too. That was 2.5 blocks away from Arnold's. And even though the team was supposedly all signed a temperance pledge where they wouldn't drink, I'll guarantee you some of those four guys, one I know for sure, the second baseman, Charles Sweezy, he went to Arnold's and had a beer.
Oh, that's
no
amazing.
Question.
All right, let's hit the phone lines here. We've got Chuck on the line. Hey, Chuck.
Hi.
You have a question for us?
Sure. I haven't heard what happened to the cowboy as Marty's broadcast partner.
Oh, he's still there. He's been on plenty of the spring training games. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go, Chuck. Appreciate the call so much. Anybody else have any traditions of their own that they perform on opening day or maybe something you remember from your childhood?
These guys probably actually work, Michael, on opening
day. Yeah, I know the feeling well.
Well, I used to, but I refuse to now.
Well, I mean, my favorite thing, and I think Howard might have mentioned, is that I'd park my car in either Covington or Newport. This is even when I was working. I'd walk the entire route up to Finley Market.
Yeah.
And I'd see those faces of those people, you know, over the Rhine, uptown, downtown, everything. And it just killed me. Those are the faces of Cincinnati. And you don't see all those faces in the ballpark on opening day.
No.
But you see them in the streets. And that's why this game is special in this town.
I do the very same thing.
Yeah.
I go up to, I end up at Finley Market, hang around, talk to folks, and then just walk the route.
Right.
And look at the people.
It's a blast. It's great.
It's great. I mean, because it's people from every walk of life that you could imagine.
Yeah.
And from all over the region and all over that neighborhood.
Right.
Of over the Rhine.
Okay. We've got just about a minute left. I want to make sure that we get this in for all of you. We're about to celebrate the opening of the new season. But when the season ends this year, what does this city look like? What does the team look like? How many games are we going to win, Randy?
I think the Reds will probably win about 83 or 84 games.
Okay, so right about 500.
Yeah, a little bit above 500, I think.
All right, Greg?
Yeah, you know, you don't want to be pessimistic, but they won 67 games last year. So if you have a 15, 17-game improvement in one season, that's very significant, and I think fans would be really happy with that. Of course, we really want the season to end with the presentation of the World Series trophy on Fountain Square.
That would be quite a celebration and parade.
As long as we're talking about baseball in September, it's going to be a good year, and I think we're going to be.
You really do?
Because if 85 wins gets you basically in the talk of postseason. So if you're going to win 81 or 82, which I think Randy's correct, that'll be the number, You're talking about conversation in September, and that's all I want.
Howard, are you as optimistic?
This is going to be a good division, but it's not going to take 90 games to win it. And I think, you know, somewhere in the low 80s. I hate these predictions. But,
Michael, what are you getting off the hook?
But yeah, Michael.
I am a non-partial journalist, or excuse me, an impartial journalist will not weigh in on this.
My good friend E is absolutely right that if we're talking about this club in September, That's all I care about.
Well, last Reds World Series, 1990, I'm just going to say 90 wins this year. Let's just go bigger.
All right, man.
Like
it. Good for you.
Thanks, guys. I want to thank all four of you for being here. Randy, John, Greg, and Howard. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.